I don't read a lot of Substack. I don't follow a lot of Substacks, but we follow a few. You follow some, I follow some. Michael Foster or their Substack, he and his wife's Substack, We Are Foster, I think is what they call that one, is one that I read from time to time. And one of his posts popped up a while back. I want to say this is like a month or two ago. And the title was The Normalization of Female Sexual Degeneracy. Not only, yeah, so it's like, that's kind of hard to say, actually. The Normalization of Female Sexual Degeneracy. And naturally, I mean, that caught my attention. You know, it caught my attention. And so I read that article, and it dove into, you know, a topic that is, I think, talked about from time to time in Christian circles. But he addressed it in, I think, intuitive and insightful way. And the topic really being around romance novels with women, and really, you know, kind of saying that that is, you know, for lack of a better comparison, kind of the pornography for women. And I know that, you know, women also struggle with pornography, but, you know, pornography, the consumption is primarily male. It's primarily men that consume pornography and have addictions there. However, you know, when you look at like book sales and just readership of romance novels, how it's like, it's huge, right?
Romanticy is like fantasy romances. It's the number one category sold in books.
In the world. I remember that actually. We were in Florida. I think it was Naples, Florida. And we took a cruise, like there's like that, you know, inlet, kind of like the harbor there. It wasn't out on the coast. It was an inlet. And all of the most expensive houses, remember that the tour guide was telling us when we were driving in front of them, they were all owned by romance novel authors. Remember that?
I didn't notice that.
Yeah.
I mean, that didn't stick out to me. That's crazy. Like,
yeah, that's a $22 million house, another, you know, romance novel.
Novelist.
Author, novelist, yeah. So, I mean, that was, you know, 5 or 6 years ago, and I thought that was interesting. But yeah, like numerically, that is just a thing. I know it's a thing in Christian circles, right? And what's interesting is that, you know, the stigma around pornography is, and rightfully so, so negative. It's addressed like the sin that it is on most, I mean, you know, the average Christian knows that pornography is harmful, sinful, damaging to marriages, damaging to men's brains, or just to humans' brains. And yet that same type of, like, I guess, concern or reaction is not there when it comes to, romanticy, as you know, as it's called. And he argues that it should be.
Yeah. You know, what's kind of funny is I was smiling, 'cause I was like, you know, I'm kind of deep into this industry 'cause my face is on a romance novel cover.
I know.
But it is an Amish. It's not like one of those where a guy was on the cover too. It was just, I was in an Amish dress at 14, and it was a very tame romance. But it does kind of make me laugh, because growing up, I wasn't allowed to read any romance novels. And this came from, I think this was just a lot of wisdom from my parents. What's interesting is my mom was very confident, you will not read any romance novels. My dad, he was good with that. Like, he didn't.
Well, I think this is why.
Why?
And I think he addresses it in this article. I've never read a romance novel. This guy had never read a romance novel until he like found it at his mom's house and was sick and like opened it up. It's like, we know these things exist. But I think a lot of fathers, husbands, it's like, we wouldn't even open that up. He wasn't, like, I have like, no clue what's in a romance novel.
It never got brought up from my dad in terms of like, hey, you aren't going to read these books. Here's why. And I say that because that was kind of noteworthy in our family, because my dad was primarily the one that had all the sit down conversations with us. So my mom would be present, but my dad was the one who gave us like the puberty talks, the purity talks, the, just like anything that was like, might be uncomfortable and you'd sit down and talk about, he was always the one that led out in that conversation. And my mom was there as a supporter, but it wasn't like my mom just came to us one-on-one very often. And so she did that though. That was her hard boundary with the romance novels. And I can only assume my dad thought the same thing, or they were aligned on that. But when I was 13 years old, I've shared this before, but my aunt gave me some wisdom, and she was She was just recently married, and she was like, if I could go back and give myself any piece of advice, I would say, do not read romance novels. It sets you up with harmful expectations for your future relationship and your marriage. And that really stuck with me at that time, because it was like a pivotal moment, and it meant a lot coming from my aunt, who is an incredible godly woman, but she felt like romance novels really sucked her in to an unhealthy state of mind. And so that wasn't something necessarily that my dad's sisters all did, because my grandma owned a lot of romance novels. And that's actually the only place I would like pick up the backs of the novels and read the backs of the novels. So I don't think they were seen as that harmful mm-hmm. in their household. And so it's just kind of interesting. I do think it is something that can kind of like get just kind of grandfather it in.
Yeah. Fly under the radar because I know, like you mentioned your grandma, I know I've seen those at some of my grandparents' houses, mm-hmm. you know, or at relatives, you know, mm-hmm. where you just see it on the bookshelf or you see them, you know, lying around. And again, I just wouldn't have ever thought to pick it up and to look at it yet. But it clearly was just available and almost expected that would be the literature of choice for, I don't know who, young women, old women.
Yeah, young girls, especially because you have the erotica category, right? So you have romanticy, which is romance and fantasy. Often that's like, can be mixed with horror, thriller, you know, extra celestial, psycho.
Affairs.
It's like all kinds of things at play right there, right? It can fall in the, what were you just talking about with the whole ghost thing? It could fall in like the paranormal category. It could just be like all kinds of things. Yeah. And then you have the straight up romance category, which can be broken down into erotica, which we all know what that is. You know, you see it at the library and you're just like, wow, this is, you know, it looks inappropriate. It looks like on the cover.
Yeah, probably.
Exactly. Yeah. It looks like century, like not period specific, but what everyone imagines the period specific romance would look like. And then you have Christian romance. And so the fact that there's even a category for Christian romance means that it's something that we assume is fine. Christian.
Yeah.
You know,
or can be at least.
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, this is God glorifying romance.
Yeah. Well, because we do know that romance can be good. Like,
it definitely
obviously,
can.
You know, so when you think, oh, Christian romance novel, on the surface, that doesn't sound wrong at all.
It's like, actually, that is a oxymoron. In terms of a Christian romance novel, I don't know if there is such a thing in terms of if the basis of the book, not that romance can't be through a book, but when the basis is a love story, I'm not sure if God is going to be glorified in that in terms of a woman reading that and then taking that, that plot. I don't know.
You don't think any love story can be the premise of a story in that?
Well, in like the Christian romance category, it's kind of like a fantasy relationship. Like it's something for women to escape the reality or to fantasize about, you know? And so I don't know if, like, obviously when you read a story of like, someone like there was just one that got brought up in our book club that was a biography about a president and his wife and like their love story, right? Or you have like Elizabeth Elliot telling her love story, but that is not in the Christian romance section.
You're talking about like
categorically Christian romance
literature.
Yes. I'm not sure how edifying that category is.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Right.
There's plenty of Christian romances, and I think they're very encouraging to read about, to hear about. I think you can learn a lot in your own marriage through those things, but they aren't written with the kind of fetishes in mind or fantasies in mind and kind of fulfilling unmet desires.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. It just, what I was hearing you say was like,
there's no such thing as Christian romance.
Like Christian romance, yeah, like any love story as the premise will not be edifying. And I was like, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, I definitely don't think that's true. I'm just not sure the category, like what the category, yeah, I think AI could write this category very well. Right. You know what I'm saying? Like yeah. The arc is going to be the same,
sure.
the emotional journey that you go on. And the Foster guy talks about this well, whereas we're very motivated by relationship and not just the act of sex. And so when there's a relationship brought alongside and there's a story brought alongside intimacy, then it is very compelling to us mm-hmm. as women versus a man might not care so much about the story. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm not a man. But like the pornography industry doesn't necessarily give this story of this backstory to what's happening.
Sure.
It's just like what's happening mm-hmm. versus we want to get caught up in the backstory and really feel attached to the characters and then kind of go down this path with them of a romance. It's maybe like, what do they say when you can't have it? Like a denied,
like a forbidden,
romance or there's like obstacles in the way and you get past the obstacles, you know, and all that tension mm-hmm. is appealing. I think also something that's different about women's romance novels is that we as women, we want to feel desired more. That makes us desire, mm-hmm. right? Is feeling desired. So I think that's something that comes across when you're reading these books is the woman is very desired or very desirable by a man. And that is an appealing thing mm-hmm. for us. Versus like who necessarily cares how cool the guy actually is in the book. He just desires the woman. And mm-hmm. so therefore it's an appealing story to get attached to. And I think it's funny is that I have read one romance novel aside from my own that I was on. Which again was like, I can't even remember. I'd probably let Lucy read that. It was very chill. I don't even know if they kiss in that or anything. But anyways, was Redeeming Love. And I think I found it at a relative's house. Elisha and I were married at the time. And I was like,
well, classic. This is like a classic confession. I stumbled upon it at a family member's house. I didn't know what it was.
No, it's one of those things where I was like, okay, I'm grown. I'm in a married relationship that's very happy. And this was at a relative's house where I thought, you know what? I'm going to give this a shot. This is a Christian romance novel. I've never read a official Christian romance novel. What's all the hype about, you know? Yeah. And I think it was, what's funny is I went on Instagram stories at the time because we had Instagram stories and kind of shared my thoughts on it. And how many people messaged back and said, well, this is, you know, this mirrors the story of Hosea and the Bible covers all these things and all this stuff. And you're like, well, the Bible doesn't cover it in a detailed way that is appealing to the female psyche. Okay. It's not even necessarily the content that is being written about,
right.
Because you can absolutely write a redemptive story of a girl who's in sexual trafficking and gets saved out of that. And, the process of understanding that God loves her and has redeemed her. She can get married to a man who loves her and wants to redeem that, element of her sexuality. Those are all beautiful things. There's nothing contextually wrong
right.
with any of that.
Like you just saying it out loud here is just fully appropriate. Like
yes.
just saying all those facts, there's nothing, yeah, arousing about that or erotic. Like it's just truth.
So it's not the content matter of these books. It is the way it is written is to manipulate emotion from women and emotion, desire, fantasy over a relationship that is not our own. And that can only lead to unmet expectations, either dissatisfaction in the real world. In my case, I was not dissatisfied with my real world, but I felt very dirty reading about someone else's relationship in this way. It didn't feel appropriate to me. And so I don't know, I don't see, and I would be curious if there are listeners that really are attached to this form of fiction, because again, when I did this on Instagram, it was crazy how attached women were to their fiction and the romance genre. What the benefit would be. I guess I don't see it as harmless entertainment. I contrast that again with even like Emma M. Lyon.
Here we go. I knew it was going to come up. I was going to bring it up.
Bring up the Unselected Journals of Emma M. Lyon. One, because everybody's reading them. Two, is because they are not Christian romance. They are not anything romance. Like, that is not the genre of the book. I think there's, because Elisha brought this up, because there's obviously love interests in M. Lyon. And he goes, okay, well, is this something you would encourage Lucy to read or not? And what's funny is I was like, I would be totally fine with her reading these at any age. And I think the reason for that being, I think, again, a romance happens in the story, but it is not defined in such a way for there to be this, it's not painted in such a way that is a fantasy.
All right, folks, if you're looking to get your children started in music lessons, Voberg Music Academy can be your one-stop shop. We teach piano, guitar, fiddle, mandolin, ukulele. And not only are you able to get weekly lessons that you can go through at your own convenience without having to drive your children to and from lessons, you're also able to participate in live calls, where we do live coaching calls. They also have live performance opportunities. We also do regular Q&A calls, these onboarding calls where you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the best, you know, how many minutes should my child be practicing each day? Okay, how do we focus on certain techniques over other techniques? Should they be reading music? Should they just be learning by ear? These are questions that we get on a regular basis. How old, you know, should my, maybe your 9-year-old's playing, but you've got a 6-year-old that wants to play, and you just want to know, okay, is it reasonable to get my 6-year-old started on the violin or on the piano?
What size violin should they get? Exactly. Where do you put the tapes? How do you restring?
Yeah, how do you tune your instrument? I tell you what, so many people aren't able to get off the ground, get from 0 to 1, because things like tuning an instrument is really tricky, especially, I mean, you know, your piano, if you've got a keyboard, that's kind of nice, right? Comes in tune. But violin, guitar, ukulele, mandolin, we really want to get you launched. And so we're just always available for live calls to get on there, tune your instrument with you, show you how to tune it so that you can get started, show you how to put the tapes on so your fingers are in tune, show you how to tighten your bow just the right amount. Because those are things that, yeah, there's lessons for those and there's videos for all those things. But I know it's nice sometimes to feel like you've got a specific, you know, you've got a specific question and you've got a specific instrument that's got its own quirks. And so we want to be able to answer those questions. Anyways, you can do that starting this summer. Be ready for the fall. Get going with your lessons. This is the other thing too. You can pay for one subscription and you can have all your kids take that instrument. Okay. So it's one instrument per subscription. So you can like sign up for fiddle and have all your kids take fiddle, or sign up for piano and have all your kids take piano. We're all about families doing this together. So anyways, check the link below. You'll get 20% off each month you're enrolled if you use the coupon code below.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, well, the reason I asked about that is because, again, I literally have no reference for romance novels. I've never read a paragraph. I don't think I've read, like you said, I've seen like the cheap covers, you know, like the paperbacks, you know, at grocery stores and stuff. So I don't know I have no reference. But when you were talking, and there's like debates now and different book clubs and, you know, groups that were around about like who the character Emma should, you know, fall in love with. And there's like the
highly recommend the series if you haven't read it already.
And it's like, it's taking up a lot of airtime, right? And a lot of, and it seems, I'm not anti-literature. I'm in a book club. We discuss fiction, you know, we talk about and debate what the author meant by a certain character's, you know, stance on something. And it could seem frivolous, you know, but it can be really enjoyable and thought provoking as well. And one might even say edifying. So it's not like I'm opposed to that at all. It just made me wonder if it's got the same potential of setting false expectations, there being that what's it called? You know, when you remove yourself from reality, like a detachment, you know, like a escapism, like, mm-hmm. like the element of escapism where women aren't content in their marriage and they're able to have some vicarious, you know, fulfillment through Emma's, you know, life. Cause my question was like, is there the same danger there? So maybe they're not classified as romance novels, but is there the same danger that can happen within that?
I think that, Yes. And I think any book, any fiction book has the potential to be escapism.
Right.
So I have to be very careful with how much fiction I read. I really allowed myself to go down the Emma Lyon rabbit hole. But I don't read fiction very often, right? Which you could attest to.
Yeah.
Aside from these books, it's been a while since I've read fiction.
Especially your ratio of like fiction to nonfiction.
To nonfiction is, exactly.
Like you might read more than the average person just because you just read a lot.
Yeah, that's
true. But your ratio is not very...
It's not high in terms of what it used to be, I guess. Like in growing up, I just read primarily fiction. But I do get very ensconced in a story. And it definitely, as a wife and mother, any form of book that is having you, not be about what God would have you be about, it can be escapism in the moment. You know, like it could be... it could really contribute to living someone else's ideals. This came up actually in our book club in discussing Emma. One woman felt like Emma was, living in London and able to pursue studying and literature and these things that she wanted to do and didn't have the time to do as a mom. And was like, you know what? Emma's living my dream. I'm feeling dissatisfied with my own life. So this wasn't, and chose to stop reading the series, which I thought was really wise. Mm-hmm. I think lots of books we can get into. I mean, a show can do this, just any form of fiction.
Social media for sure. I think is like probably the number one culprit these days.
Probably
for being dissatisfied with your life as you see somebody else's life. And
yeah, you're right, actually.
Or maybe, I mean, the number two culprit. Romance novels are obviously the number one culprit.
Yeah, but I would say fiction books definitely have that potential if you're envious of the character and desiring their life over living out your own in a good way, then it becomes escapism. It can lead to procrastination and laziness and overall neglect of your children and your home and your husband and things that need to get done that God would have you do. So I do think fiction in general is a category that needs to be stuck in its rightful place and okay, you read before bed or you read, an afternoon quiet time
or a free day
during a rest time, right? Mm-hmm. On a weekend. I think as women, fiction in general can lead to all of these things.
Yes.
Okay. So there's that. But I would say Foster, I think, put it really well, or he was equating porn with romance novels, porn for men and romance for women. And he says, porn is twisting our men. We are right to decry it. It warps their understanding of female sexual enjoyment, fetishizes. Thank you. Sex diminishes their self-control and encourages depraved desires. We should war against it. However, we must understand that what is being called women's literature is twisting our women. It warps their sense of male romance. It fetishizes, dang it, that word again. Sex diminishes personal responsibility and encourages depraved desires. So I would say to me, that would be an unhealthy romance. In Emma, I wouldn't say any of those things are encouraged.
Sure, it's wholesome. It's encouraging.
The men have real flaws. Nothing's perfect in the story. It's not this lightning bolt hidden, I don't know. I don't know exactly how to explain it, but I do think that how the author writes about even the characters, even the man looking at the woman and saying something like, wow, you look pretty today, versus like noticing the curve of her hips and, dragging out how the female form looks. Like Redeeming Love definitely drags out the female form, drags out exactly what the woman's doing to tantalize the man. And that's very much highlighting the sexual desire and the sexual nature of the relationship versus this interaction where he is appreciating her as a person, just like hyper-focusing on the sexual elements of the woman.
Yeah. And again, this is going to be a different definition for, each person, but it is, there needs to be a return to just like wholesome love and wholesome romance and attraction to people. And I think of that even, in Jane Austen, going to an older author. Again, there's romance stories in all of her books. Mm-hmm. But it it is very, it feels very wholesome, right?
Yeah, their morality is very high in Jane Austen. But I do think, like you said, a Jane Austen book can definitely still be escapism.
No doubt.
People can want to escape to that time period. Mm-hmm. They could fantasize over, you know, my husband isn't Mr. Darcy or Mr. Knightley or all these guys, which mine is actually better. But I think that's genuinely why, like, it might sound silly, but I don't feel any danger in that element of reading a romance novel. Like, Redeeming Love did not make me unsatisfied in my own marriage by any stretch of the imagination. You know, it's just kind of like, but I'm very fulfilled in marriage. Like I find so much enjoyment and satisfaction in marriage to Elisha that I don't know is the norm. Mm-hmm.
When Katie and I travel in the summer with all of our kiddos, we can't help sometimes but look at other travelers that have RVs and campers and have some level of envy towards them. We feel it, okay? I know we shouldn't, but we do because it looks so accommodating to families, right? Your own space, a place that's air-conditioned, you can get out of the heat, nap your kiddos in a pack and play. Well, we discovered Outdoorsy.com, and this is the most trusted RV rental marketplace in the U.S. They offer thousands of RVs and campers nationwide, and they're available in your neighborhood. And there's multiple ways for you to travel and to do this, okay? You can drive it yourself, or you could tow it, or you can have it delivered and fully set up to wherever you're going at your destination, okay? That's pretty convenient. Now, there's built-in peace of mind that comes with this. There's comprehensive insurance, 24/7 customer support, roadside assistance is included in your rental. And here's the deal. There's great value because oftentimes these are more affordable than hotels or vacation rentals. So it's your own space and it can be more affordable as well. If you are over 21 years of age, you do have to be 21 years in order to rent these things. The way you do it is it's just three simple steps, okay? You go to outdoorsy.com and you search and you choose an RV that fits your family and your trip, okay? And then you book with confidence. There's insurance, there's support, there's protection included. And then you hit the road, okay? Or if you're having it delivered to your location, I guess you'd still hit the road, but you would drive in your own car and then you'd arrive at your destination with an RV fully set up, okay? Those are the three steps. And this summer, they're actually running a campaign where when you use our code, which is FAMILY, they remove all service fees from your booking. And so when you go to outdoorsy.com, that's outdoorsy.com, and you use our code FAMILY at checkout, then you don't have to pay the service fees. They remove them. Okay. And in for instances like this, less fees are better. So this summer, if you're going to 250th anniversary celebrations, if you're going to down Route 66 to celebrate its 100th year anniversary, if you're going to fiddle contests, family camps, whatever it is, Christian conferences, go to outdoorsy.com and utilize their great services. Yeah, and I mean, I'm glad that's the case, and it's that sentiment is reciprocated. But I do think we've got boundaries too. There are things that we just don't allow ourselves to entertain. You know, like there's just entertainment we don't allow in the home, and these are things that we've discovered over years. You know, I think we've talked about rom-coms even I think on the podcast before where we were like okay with them until we weren't, you know? And then it's like, there's some that just like, wow, what are we doing? Like, we don't want this in our home.
It's true. We haven't watched one of those for a long time.
And that was something that like is actually just like kind of commonplace advice coming from a lot of different Christian marriage, you know, counselors or couples or people that inspire marriages. It's just kind of just, you know, don't have this in your home. Don't participate in this. And so I do think that we like each other and I'm attracted to you and we have a lot of fun naturally. But I also do think that we've just put a lot of boundaries in place, where we are not given, I guess, the same fodder, that seems like some people have. So again, we can't ever speak to every marriage. That's the thing. We've got our own marriage and everybody has their own marriage. But I think that should be the thing is it should be your own marriage, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the danger of a fiction, a fantasy of, again, going back to social media, going back to just video content, written word content. If it's forming discontentment, causing discontentment in your own marriage, you just got to cut that off altogether. There's nothing that this has that's more valuable than your marriage. And I'm just blown away year after year with how malleable our minds are, mm-hmm. and our expectations and our appetites. And you see this, like, that people are getting depraved appetites through what they read or through mm-hmm. what they watch, mm-hmm. and that are unnatural. They're definitely ungodly. But the same goes for the flip side. You can actually get godly appetites and wholesome mm-hmm. appetites by facilitating those in your life with the content that you're consuming, with what you're choosing to focus on. You know, whatsoever things are true and lovely and virtuous and of good report, think on these things. And we can do that in our marriage. And so, you know, whenever we hear about, you know, men not being able to have, you know, a healthy intimacy life with their spouse because of pornography, we hear just as often women not enjoying sex with their, or probably more often, this mm-hmm. comes up more, is women don't want to have anything to do with their husbands. They don't enjoy it at all. And you're like, where's that coming from? Right? Mm-hmm. Like, this is something that is just not healthy. It's not what God mm-hmm. intended. And so to start getting vigilant in eliminating things from your life that could be contributing to that is a worthy endeavor. Mm-hmm. And I think if there's anything that's on that seems, you know, just like you're not sure, if it's questionable, then it's like, well, then take a break from it then, you know, mm-hmm. like, you don't have to commit for life. But get it out of your life for the well-being of your home. Because I am just blown away with how, again, we can be formed into like whatever, like our brains can just take us so many different ways. Like we're not fixed. Like, and that can be really awesome when you choose to set your mind on things above and not in things of this earth, but it can also be extremely dangerous and unhealthy when you allow your brain to start fixating on, you know, sensual fantasies and, mm-hmm. you know, just some, you know, sexual exploits of other people. It's like, just don't, you can't do that.
Well, there's only so much time we're allotted in every day too. And so it's like, if the hobby is going to be focusing on sensuality, then that's just not going to be a hobby that feeds into the rest of your home and brings life to the rest of your home, just on a straight up, like, where are you investing your time and energy and what are the inputs coming in, versus, you know, reading something that is going to be challenging or edifying or stimulating or create new thoughts, bring up discussion with your husband. It can just, again, challenge your thinking in new ways. Like you said, I am shocked. The older I get, the more I am confident that you need people around you, you need frameworks around you, you need belief systems around you to keep you solid.
Yeah, keep you on the straight and narrow.
Yes. People talk about that, you know, sending a kid to college at 18 years old and how so-and-so gets swept off their feet. And I'm like, I think we notice that because that's maybe the first time it happens in people's lives, but we're never safe from that as adults. I think by the time we're older, I don't think it's that, oh, we're just so set in our belief systems, we're just so solid. I think that usually we have more people around us in a stronger network and we've adopted a belief system and built a network around us that keeps us really headed mm-hmm. in a certain direction. And that needs to be something that's the focus of our children as soon as possible, is like, get good people around you.
Yep.
Whoever you're bending your ear to is going to be, going to have an impact.
Yes.
Always will have an impact. It doesn't matter if you're 60 years old, it will have an impact.
Yeah. Well, and I would say like bending your ear to, but like those, you know, the five, you become the common denominator, the five people you spend the most time with, you know, it's what people say. And I think that that's true regardless of, so it's like everybody says, oh, they go to college and they get brainwashed by the liberal ideology mm-hmm. and so on and so forth. I think it has more to do with who their five friends are. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, we know the professors, or we know that there's an agenda, or we know whatever, the critical theory, that's, we know all those things exist. But like that same kid could stay at home and his five best friends, you know, that he's going and hanging out with could lead him to just as dark of a place. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, like the closest, your closest peers, you know, and who your community is critical.
It's going to be really important. And so I think this will impact, even if you have close friends that are reading romance novels a lot, that's going to impact their view of their husbands. It's going to rub off on you and your view of your marriage mm-hmm. and your expectations. Again, I think as soon as we can just fall in love with who our husband is and not try to think like, I don't know. I had a friend tell me that she was, she had grown up at, where her father was very romantic, with like big extravagant dates and flowers and surprises, and her husband wasn't that way. And it's still a struggle with that comparison. And it's funny because Elisha is romantic in ways that my dad was not romantic, but he's not, but Daddy, I guess, if you've ever read Daddy's book, my father's book, is like this next level in terms of what how much he loves surprises, and therefore how much he loves surprising my mom, you know? So it's like, I forget about that sometimes until I hear the crazy things he did or does, still does. And then the things that she reciprocates, like I do not do the things for Elisha and the creative, surprising, spontaneous ways that my mom does for my father. And it's incredible. They have this synergistic relationship. They know that matters to each other. I mean, I don't think my mom's like actually a woman that like thrives on surprises necessarily, but she's grown to thrive on surprises. And so I think that's something that it just didn't cross my mind, because she brought up, well, your dad was really romantic. Does Elisha do those same things? I'm like, well, Elisha's romantic, but he doesn't like do those things per se. But that never crosses my mind in terms of what I expect Elisha from him or want from him even. And so I really think that it's just like embracing how your husband loves you. Mm-hmm. And being like, wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. It's going to make your marriage so much more fun because your husband does love you and is going to show you in special ways that if you're trying to like, there's not like one way for someone to show love.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's just not really.
It is, because it is like, what are you focusing on? Because I'm not saying that you can't say, hey, I just can't think of a scenario where this would happen, but. It's like if you're thinking about the way another person romances their spouse,
yeah.
You know, it's kind of like you're already wrong a little bit. You know, it's like there is an element of just being able to be happy for people, because you've even asked me, you know, like maybe a friend will like surprise her husband with something, or mm-hmm. she got a babysitter, or she's like, oh, do you have any ideas? It's like that. Like it never crossed my mind. Like I'm able to like be so happy for those people and not ever think, oh, I wish my wife would do that, or I wish she was more.
Or there are times where I thought, oh, this is going to really show Elisha. He wants some big elaborate surprise. And then you were like, I did not appreciate said surprise. No,
maybe. I'm sure I appreciated the effort.
Not, no, yeah. You did. You
did. And I'm not saying
but it wasn't
grow,
what you would have chosen.
Like,
does that make sense?
I actually want to grow at getting you gifts. That's been a funny thing is I just don't appreciate gifts that well, and I don't think in terms of gifts.
This Valentine's Day was amazing. I thought you surprised me with all those printouts of our anniversary trip.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that worked out, but I have not been one, that, like when it comes to items, I think you like trips, and I'm like, okay, I can wrap my mind around experiences or special dates, but like jewelry or books or, you know, things that you've been really thoughtful in doing that for me. And I've every time
neither
I've tried, it's been a little
big time item people.
Right.
Well, that's not true. I have enjoyed items that you've purchased for me.
Good.
Yeah. And they've meant a lot, and they've been sweet. So I do think.
Yeah. I don't know. Going back to like just romance novels and escapism and discontentment in marriages, like, I just think it's worth eliminating all that stuff. And
yeah.
I do, it does sound like, again, I can't speak from experience. I don't know how this all is, but it does seem like these fly under the radar and are accepted even in Christian communities. Whereas it's like, they can be just as damaging, it sounds like, as things like pornography, which is, you know, so obviously on the surface, a sin. And yet we don't handle it with the same type of severity.
Yeah. I think like pornography makes it difficult for men to interact or appreciate real world women.
Yep.
And romance books make it difficult for women to appreciate and interact with a real world man.
Yep.
And who's not just always going to be, I don't know. Again, I don't know what these guys are, but, they have other things on their mind. And so I that's not a helpful thing. I think something that's different too with like women like a thread of romance in their books. And again, going back to, is that wrong? Is that not, you know, I think of the Louis L'Amour Western books, like there's always a
interest,
romantic interest. And I think that's why I enjoy the books just as much as, you know, our 9-year-old son or you, is there's adventure, but there's also this little, like, he gets the girl in the end.
With G.A. Henty, yeah, right?
G.A. Henty.
The same thread. Yeah.
Yeah. He gets the girl in the end. And so it is this compelling story. I think there's something that guys appreciate about that in a book too.
Oh yeah.
You know, is there's usually like a romantic interest. And so it's not like, okay, where do you draw the line on that romantic interest? And again, I think, what is the nature of the romantic interest and what is the purpose of it in the story? Is it to be arousing, or is it there for just enjoyment of the journey and to add the spice of life? I think too, there's a lot of, you know, classic books where there is a romantic interest, but it's written in such a proper way.
Yeah, it's kind of modest.
Yeah, exactly. It's a more modest telling of a story. And so I think I would be, again, I grew up reading a lot of classic books and got very into the story. Even like Louisa May Alcott's like Little Women, right? All four sisters end up getting married, or one dies actually, but the three sisters get married. And you're along for the journey, and it's very fun, but I didn't feel like it was setting up any expectations for a future husband or relationship. Like, I've never been let down. Let's say that. Yeah, Elisha. So that just says something to him. But based on what I've read.
Right.
And then, like, a book that is more modern that's been circulating that I did read, that we read in our book club, Anna Karenina. Not Anna Karenina.
Yes, people have heard about that one.
Yeah, that one's old. That one's old. Man, I read it. They read it the week before Anna Karenina.
Oh, it's about the Norwegian or the
Yes, Nordic. Kristen Lavrin's daughter. Yes. That is one where a lot of women were saying, I think I talked about this on our book review, but a lot of women were saying, oh, I would have my daughters read this as a cautionary tale of what not to do. And that isn't a book I would have Lucy read.
It's not.
No, it's not. Again, if she's married, whatever, if she's already had sexual relations, basically in a healthy marriage, I don't think there's any harm in reading the book. But and I think too, the nature of the book is split into covering a woman's whole life. So therefore it's not just focused on, you know, that small period of time when she's trying to find a husband. That's really limited to the first book. But I would say that first book in and of itself of the trilogy is, I think, putting unhealthy fantasies out there still. Even as a cautionary tale, even the way it's written, I think there is this, there are certain scenes in the story that, again, I hadn't read scenes like that since a Redeeming Love book, you know, for me, where I was just like, I think they were too graphic. They were too specific. You kind of like felt your heart beating faster. Like, okay, where are they going with this?
Right.
You know, and that's as a married woman that's already been through these things. I would not have I would not encourage, you know, I'm picturing myself at 16 years old. This would be very specific for me. And I think it would also be kind of setting a stage of normalcy for things that isn't normal, if that makes sense. Like, if a man touched me in a certain way, before, I didn't know that anyone would ever touch a woman like that before they were married. Does that make sense? I never read about that. I never, that wasn't considered normal in my book. And so obviously, like, people down at our public school, they slept with each other and I knew all that, but it was seen in a, like, these are unsaved people,
sure.
You know, they like,
heathens.
They have like a totally different
value system.
Yeah. But it never crossed my mind that in a healthy relationship, there would be these levels of boundaries broken. And so I think there was a safety in that, because if a guy had tried to take liberties, I would have been like, whoa, that is not normal. It wouldn't have been in the back of my mind like, well,
this does happen.
I did read this and this does happen and it can all work out. You know what I'm saying? So I just think sometimes certain ideas being planted there would just be very unhealthy.
I know. And that is, I think that's, you know, people will talk about that in the people that, you know, whether it's the coming out of the pure, what's called purity culture, or more conservative maybe groups in the homeschool world where so little was talked about with sexuality, you know, and it was treated as like a scary thing, maybe, you know, or a dangerous thing. And they will say that that was harmful to their development, you know, or their whatever, you know, marriage or whatever. I don't know what it was harmful to. And on the flip side, you obviously have people that, you know, had way more experiences than what they wish they would have had, you know, and took that into marriage. But I would so lean on the conservative side. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's like, I did not regret one time, like not knowing things until after marriage.
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, and I don't, and again, maybe people will say, oh, you can be taken advantage of if you don't know those things.
No, you but can't. It's like, I think that's the biggest myth ever.
Right. I agree. I think that's what you're saying is it's like, actually,
it's like you can know at 5 years old, you know, if someone's going to touch you in private parts, that's off limits. Mm-hmm. If someone's going to ask you to take your clothes off, that's off limits. You know, what's inappropriate.
Right.
So that is like the most ridiculous statement I've ever heard. Seriously, that people use in this defense of like, oh, well, if you don't know, you'll be taken advantage of. I'm like, how?
Yeah.
Like, how are they going to get past the clothes and the touching and still take advantage of me?
Yeah.
I guess, you know, that's fine. That's not like the end of the world if they're going to sit over there and mind their own business. And
sure. I mean, maybe like know. If it's like a really aggressive, you know, like a predator type, you could, because of your naivety, you could get like alone with that person in a car or in a room.
Exactly. Like never be alone with a man. That's a good rule.
Yeah.
Exactly. I heard someone say the other day, like, well, that's just like a purity culture rule or something. I'm like, or it's just like really wise.
Yeah.
Exactly. It'll save you from a lot of issues. Never be alone with a man in a room.
Yes.
You know? So I think there's some of these boundaries that are just
help just solid. Make a ton of sense. Yeah.
Solid.
We're bringing it back.
Absolutely.
Well, and this is the thing. Sure. Well, you can say, oh, now that we have parents or now that we have kids, we want all these are the boundaries I was brought up with. Mm-hmm. Like it really was. And it's like, I don't regret being awkward in, if I was ever alone with a girl, you know, and it's just like, oh, you know, what is this whole situation? And, like, I was so far from being Mr. Suave or Mr., you know, a womanizer in any way that like, I'm fine with that. And so I'm fine kind of running that back with my kids because I love my marriage and I love you. And like, I couldn't be happier with how this has worked out for me. I don't know of a luckier man.
Well, I think too, it's all, I think I feel the same way. And I think that it comes down to the desire, not being like, you know, the whole popsicle that got licked or the, you know, the gum that got chewed or whatever the, you know, the analogy was. My parents never gave me one of those analogies. I heard this from friends later in life. It was 100% our desire is to honor God and walk in his ways. And this is what he commands us to do. Yeah. That's all I was concerned about growing up was honoring God, honoring my parents and walking in his ways. I don't get where this, purity culture, I think maybe where it led people astray is people doing things for other people. But it's like, you aren't doing this for, I don't know.
To get some outcome.
Yeah, to get some outcome or whatever. It's like God calls us to purity.
Right. End of story.
End of story. You are called to purity. You can create a culture around it. You cannot create a culture around it. Like, I don't care what the stories are, what your horror story is. That's what God calls us to. And so if there was guilt or shame or something tied to that that was not from God, then that's easy to sort out. It's not from God.
It is. Yeah, that
you
is,
know,
it's
if
just
someone
a
else
funny,
puts that on you.
You're right, because those stories stand out, right, when it's the guy or the girl that wasn't ever allowed to be alone with anybody. They weren't allowed to date in high school or whatever, but like come to find out they were, you know, they were pregnant at 15 and actually had an abortion behind their parents' back or something. Like you hear stories.
Wow,
you're like,
this
oh,
is
that's
a strong story.
Yeah. Yes. Just whatever, you know, you're like, that's so extreme. And so that's why we should never have such strict rules. And you're like, well, that's the standout, right? Like that's an outlier. Most people that grow up with strict sexual standards have healthier marriages and healthier lives later on. These are studies that we did. Same thing with like alcohol, same thing with drugs. People will say, well, if you're too strict on these things, they're going to binge. What do they call it? The boomerang effect or something. The
Dr. Leonard Sachs covers this in his book, The Collapse on Parenting, the myth of the
the boomerang. And it's just, it's not statistically true. It's like those stories do stand out when it's the pastor's kid.
And we spread the stories very rapidly.
Exactly. And so, right. They make the news. But it's not actually true. Like we shouldn't base our parenting off of those standouts, those outliers. Having high standards and all those things, it sets our children up for the most likely to succeed in those areas.
Yeah. So we're off on purity culture, but you know, I think people would see maybe something like banning books is maybe a part of that. Like we have freedom to read what we want to read. And it's like, well, you do, but everything, every diet has its ramifications. And so, yeah, again, okay, what I was going to say with the Kristen Slaverin's Daughter thing too, is written in modern English. So I think there's some things that, there's probably some scenes like that in classic books, mm-hmm. but they aren't written in modern English. And yeah, so they're kind of behind a veil.
Well, this is the whole, that's the thing. Because it's like, okay, people will say, oh, there's rated R content throughout the whole Bible, right? The whole Bible's, it's like, yeah, the way they say it isn't some like stumbling block for people. Yeah. When it says so-and-so, you know, they laid with so-and-so and she conceived, you're kind of like, oh, okay, I understood what happened, but they're not explaining
or
how they did it.
He knew so-and-so.
He knew, yeah, exactly. They knew so-and-so and they conceived. Like, we've just read that our whole life, and there's rape, there's like all sorts of weird, like sexual depravity in the Bible. And yeah, it's stated,
incest, all of it.
It's stated just matter of factly. And you just are like, got it. Like, you know, information, you know, obtained, and you move on with whatever the point is, you know, in the passage or whatever God's trying to articulate. You're not sitting there like, I guess, meditating on it, you know, and they're not drawing you in this way that's just getting your imagination going.
No, the fact that like our 9-year-old is reading through the Bible this year, it's perfectly appropriate mm-hmm. for him to read through the Bible, and he'll bring stuff to us and be like, hey, what about this? What about this? But it's like, you know, when he's going through Song of Solomon, that's as juicy as it gets. And your teeth are like flocks of sheep and stuff, you know, it's just kind of like more power to you. You know, if you yeah. want to enjoy that literature,
yeah, that ivory tower. The ivory. Yeah, that's
what. Don't get too explicit. Yeah, don't get too explicit. So anyways, I think the danger of romance novels is not the fact that there's romance. It is a specific form of writing expected to elicit certain mental and emotional and physical states in women.
Yeah, that's
there
like
is
the intent.
A desired outcome. That is the intent of the writing. That's author's intent. And so that puts it in a category that is going to be outside of, I think, what is helpful for women to consume.
Enough said. Folks, thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.